I am Jimbo Paris, and you are listening to the Jimbo Paris Show.
All right, how's it going, everyone? I am Jimbo Paris, and welcome again to the Jimbo Paris Show. And today we have a special guest, a scientist from GE, material scientist and Edison engineer, and it's Nathaniel McKeever. And again, we are going to sit down and have a little talk with him and kind of learn a lot about him.
Looking forward to being on the show.
And I'm looking forward to interview you. So the first question I ask is always, what do you specifically do?
So specifically, I am a material scientist by training. So the end result of my work goes into the development of a new material, one that'll be likely used on engines. I work a lot with GE Aerospace. But even more specifically, my work is focused on a subfield called image analysis. So looking at taking micrographs from a inspection tool like optical microscopy or scanning electron microscopy, and analyzing that, extracting bits and pieces of information to give to a experimentalist to be able to analyze and progress their development of that material system.
Okay, that's really cool. And kind of to add to that, how long have you been in this industry?
So I studied material science in college. I did my undergraduate as well as my master's in that discipline. And then upon graduating, I joined GE Research. So that's been about 2.5 years with the company. So I guess in total, that would be about 7.5 years of studying explicitly material science.
Now, you kind of gave a bit of this already, but can you kind of give us a bit of, you know, your career history and how you specifically became an Edison engineer and what is that?
Yeah. So really, my interest for math and science began at an early age, around middle school. At that point, I was gaining an aptitude towards math and science and wanted to dive deeper in certain courses in high school. Around high school time, I made the decision to pursue engineering as a field. I didn't know exactly what discipline yet, but I knew I wanted to go down that direction. So I applied to engineering schools, went to Johns Hopkins University to study engineering. At that point, I was undecided. I didn't know if I wanted to do mechanical engineering or material science. It was all pretty vague to me. So I took a course that exposed me to all the disciplines of engineering. It was just a 1-hour lecture that kind of gave a deep dive or a high level overview of what is that discipline of engineering? What type of work do you do? And in that course, I was able to down select my interest towards either mechanical engineering and material science. And I since then got involved in a bunch of research programs at my school. And from that led me to switch my major to material science and study that discipline more closely. I continued to be a part of a number of research projects while I was at Johns Hopkins, going from group to group, trying to see what the different types of material science is within that broader discipline. It's a very large field of study, ranging from biomaterials to non-biomaterials like metals or ceramics. So trying out a number of labs, seeing where I thought my interests would most align. And towards the end of my undergrad, I got a referral for a internship program at GE Research. And I was really interested in the work that's being done in industry and how what I was learning in school is relevant in the industrial space. And so that led me to apply for the Edison program. The Edison program is unique because you do a rotation every single year, trying out different groups, different laboratories. In theory, you can do work that's outside the discipline that you studied in college. So I could spend a year rotation in the characterization group, let's say, and then spend another year exploring an area completely outside of material science as a discipline, perhaps as a controls engineer. In my case, I already knew my interest was material science, so I kept all my rotations within the characterization group, really focused on this area of high throughput image analysis. And so that's led me to where I am currently. I'm really focusing in and developing an expertise in this space.
The next question I was going to ask is, what specific task or group did you belong to? But to add to that, how did sort of the rotations and you getting into image analysis kind of affect the specific task or group you eventually joined in with when you began working at GE?
So when I began working, they really looked to align your skill set with projects that are currently available. And because of my internship, I was exposed to really this new area. All my work prior to joining GE was mostly experimental driven, meaning that I would go into a lab and run experiments by hand. And during my internship, I was given the task of developing a neural network for semantic segmentation of gamma-gamma prime alloys. So what does that mean? That means they took a bunch of images of this alloy system, and they are left with a number of micrographs. And the idea is, could we train a neural network to do a segmentation, basically discern what is one phase in that image versus another phase in that image, and be able to quantify that information. Now, at that point, I didn't have much of a background in computer science. I took maybe a course or so, but nothing with neural network development or implementation. And that entire summer experience really exposed me to this new field. It sort of, I would say, kind of was a pivot point in my career. It led me to take more computation-based courses in my master's program, and then ultimately led to what I would be doing my first rotation upon joining GE full-time, really continuing in that vein, looking at how to utilize AI, neural network design, to be able to accelerate our image analysis workflow. And from there, it's just one thing led to a next, right? I got involved with a project, and that ended up leading me to another project and really beginning building my skill set within this domain.
The Edison Engineering Development Program, I might be wrong about this, but is it the same thing as the Edison Engineering you were explaining before? Or is this a specific kind of...
Yeah, so it's the same thing. So there's some words that are relatively interchangeable. So sometimes we'll call it the Edison Engineering Development Program or just the Edison Engineering Program. It's the same concept. It's this three-year rotation program that aims to give you a deeper understanding of how research is done in industry.
So what are some notable experiences that you've personally had at GE? These could be non-business oriented. These could be a lot more personal, anything really.
Yeah, so I think what's unique about GE Research is the emphasis on continual learning, right? At GE Research, we're looking at developing a material system or a product that is really 5 to 10 years out, right? Where it's not direct implementation in industry. There's going to be a delay between what we're investigating and its implementation on the market. And as a result, it's our responsibility as researchers to continuously learn. And there's a big emphasis within GE Research on this. And I think one of the most unique opportunities that I've been able to have since joining the company is being able to go out and learn new software that's available in the commercial setting. I went out to do an entire training on a software platform called the Eigenvector software. And it was really interesting because I was able to spend a week understanding PCA, principal component analysis, at a deeper level. And I think that's a unique opportunity within the industrial setting. You always think about learning and that style of course being present in school, but the ability to continue doing that post-graduation is, I think, a very unique one and makes GE Research very special. And that experience, while is unique, isn't just unique to me and my experience within GE Research. I know many colleagues who also partake in various learning opportunities while with the company.
How did your passion for the field of kind of material science kind of begin? Did it start in your childhood? Did it start when you were a teen? Did it start, you know, in college? When did it happen and how did it?
Yeah, I think it really first started off with that interest of math and science. But then also it started to develop with certain questions of why certain things occur, right? You look at certain structures that exist throughout human history. Let's take, for example, the Eiffel Tower, right? You look at that and you're like, this building's really tall, right? It has a bunch of holes in it. Why does it still stand? Why doesn't it just completely crumble? I mean, people have built for ages buildings out of stone that are much shorter. How come this can be so much taller and look way less stable than the stone buildings, but still stand the test of time? And the answer to that is a materials question. You know, you can ask your parents, why is the Eiffel Tower strong? And they'll often say, well, steel's stronger than stone. And that's a great answer, but it doesn't fully fulfill that childhood question of, well, why? I mean, why is evidently it's stronger than stone, but what in steel makes that uniquely stronger than stone? And that's the question that material science looks to answer. It's really this question of why certain mechanisms occur. Once you understand why that material is strong, what in the microstructure enables that strength, you can begin to optimize it and make the next generation material. And I think that's really what's interesting about the domain. In some ways, it's the primary form of engineering. Without a new material, all the subsequent forms of engineering really does not exist. You always start with the material before you go on and implement a mechanical design or come up with a new computer system. Everything begins with that material. So material science really drives, in some ways, most of what we do at, with engineering. So I thought it'd be a very interesting field to study as a result.
And again, you seem like a very, you are in fact a very intelligent person. So when you were young, kind of, what challenges did you face when growing up and doing the sciences? Because I would assume a lot of kids your age weren't into sciences as much as you were.
Well, it's always a tricky question, kind of looking back and be like, oh, well, what challenges did you face necessarily? I think one thing that's hard is we all develop at different rates, right? I think often many individuals can be discouraged by not meeting certain metrics at an early age. What I mean by this is, for example, often in middle school or elementary school, you'll take a standardized test. And that standardized test, you don't think will dictate that much, but ends up dictating whether you get placed in that advanced course or whether you don't get placed in that advanced course. And from that simple decision at the age of 10, you end up being slotted, or you begin thinking, wow, I'm good at math and science, I'm not good at English, or I'm good at history and not good at music, let's say. And I think one thing that if I could impress upon others is perhaps don't put so much weight into that first initial test. Bear with it. Wait a little bit longer. Let yourself develop more before you say, I'm not good at math and science, I'm not good at English. For me, this is sort of a thing that resonates because my birthday was later in a cutoff. My birthday was towards the end of the New York City public school cutoffs. And if you read some Malcolm Gladwell books, you'll discover very quickly the world, unfortunately, isn't the most favorable if your birthday is late in the cutoff, just because your brain is less developed at a younger age. It's not the biggest challenge you'll ever see, but it's enough to make you discouraged, right? And if you're discouraged, you will not continue that focus. And if you can sort of overcome that hump of discouragement and continue that focus, you can be greatly rewarded through that diligence of studying and sort of pushing through. You know, you really can't say you're good or bad at something until at least you're, you know, in your college years. It's hard to say, well, oh, I'm bad at, I can't write something well in high school. I mean, chances are you might just need to focus a little bit more to get good at that. So being open-minded, being patient with yourself is something that I've definitely had to struggle and learn over time. Now, in elementary school, I'll be perfectly honest, I was not placed in those classes. I was not showing much of an aptitude towards really any subject. And I was very fortunate that I went on to middle school, and in my middle school setting, it was smaller class size. There was more attention being given to each individual student. That it was really during that period I noticed that I was able to begin excelling in the academics. And I'm very grateful for some amazing teachers during my middle school time. And that ended up leading to the confidence to do well in high school, leading me to go to Johns Hopkins and now be at GE Research. But if you kind of take a couple steps back in that story, the story could have easily gone a different way, right? Had I not had those incredible teachers, had those teachers not had an open mind, given every student more focused, had those class sizes not been a little bit smaller, I could have never made it to that class that got the extra 1 hour of studies. And it's a hard one, right? It's one that this problem is one that's not going to be solved on this show, unfortunately, but it's definitely one to consider, right? Because as a person, when you're doing your studies, I think often we look at our peers and from that assessment, we'll quickly say, yeah, I'm just not good at math and science. He's much better. But if you can stick with it a little bit, you know, give yourself that time to develop, recognize that maybe it does take, you know, a couple of years or you were just later in the cutoff and, you know, just you have to be patient. Your time when you might excel might be in high school. And then in speaking to a lot of friends and colleagues now, I'm not alone in this journey, right? There are many individuals who don't show promise until later on into their high school years, or sometimes even their college years. So I think the big takeaway from this is learn the art of patience. You know, even, and I try to remember this even as a professional, right? It takes some time to... You want to learn everything so quickly, right? And you work with people who are very, very bright around you. And sometimes you just need to take that time and recognize that you need to give your brain time to learn new information and really be able to absorb and get to that next level of understanding to be able to progress a certain field or hit that next benchmark in a career.
Okay, patience. All right. Before this interview, I kind of took a quick glance at your LinkedIn. And you're essentially a materials scientist working on AI. Mm-hmm. So how do these two different things come together, materials science and AI?
The use of AI within social media platforms, let's say, that's I think what comes to a lot, number of people's minds, as well as looking at AI for Google searching. That's where we see it very prevalent in our day-to-day. AI is a fancy term for being able to sort through data. Right. It's new, but it's not exactly new. The math has been around for a bit and it enables us to look at large pieces of information and be able to just understand correlations and perhaps where to go next in that big swath of information. And when you think about material science as a discipline, we are a discipline with a large amount of information, very disparate in its format. Sometimes we see a lot of what we call tabular data, where these are numbers related to certain properties of a material. Let's say the electron negativity of a material or the atomic number. Now, AI really comes in as a way to help develop reason and correlations between these very seemingly disparate pieces of information. Richard Feynman, I believe, said, I might be quoting him incorrectly, but I believe he once said that one of the greatest lies of this universe is the fact that we can't accurately make a new material. And what does he mean by that? We know all the elements of the periodic table, and you would think it would just be like cooking, right? We could just be like, oh, let's take some titanium, let's take some niobium, put it together, and we'll get something new. It doesn't exactly work like that. The physics is incredibly complicated once we start combining these unique elements together. And the hope is that AI helps us or guides us to that next spot. And that's where the merger really comes in. Using it to guide us as to where to go next. Is it perfect? No. There's many rooms for other forms of data analytics to come in. But it's a tool to help guide that experimentalist to accelerate materials faster.
Excellent. Now, this tool in particular, can you kind of tell us the importance of this work and kind of the goal that GE is aiming for or has?
So right now, to make a new material costs an immense amount of money and also requires an immense amount of time. Don't quote me on this, but I'm fairly confident it takes about $1 billion and about 10 years worth of time to make a new alloy system. And why is this important, right? I was saying many of the problems earlier that we see in our world are materials problems. When you think about global warming, how to solve certain concepts like this, how to make an engine that perhaps is more fuel efficient, all of this stems from how do we get a more ideal material. So if we are the bottleneck of the engineering process, that means there's huge amounts of investment to being seen to see how we can make material science go faster. The word faster cannot be said enough in the field of material science. If we could be making alloy systems that are new left and right and have them useful, that would be huge, right? AI gives us the ability to potentially go faster, to screen through materials quickly before doing the expensive experiments. Then from that initial down selection, be able to then go forth and do experiments where they are necessary. And the hope here is by going through this process and using AI to inform those experiments, we can enable material science to be done faster. And that's important for end customers as well as larger problems such as global warming.
Now, besides global warming, how do you think this can be kind of translated to more everyday things and scenarios for like the common person?
Most people these days travel quite a bit, right? Mm-hmm. You get on a plane. One place that my work is directly applicable is the development of new engines. So the average person will get on a plane a number of times a year to see family, loved ones, especially now it's around Thanksgiving, Christmas time. So I know a number of people will be traveling. And often you get that ticket that's fairly expensive. What if you could reduce the cost of that ticket, enable more people to see the world, explore new cultures, exchange ideas, right, is one of the hallmarks of really the 20th century, this ability to explore the world cheaply. And that's going to be something that is a trend going into the 21st century, right? How can we see new places, be able to connect the world more closely? I think that's where the end person will see some of the work that I'm involved with. Now, obviously, I'm not the one solving that myself. That is huge teams of people, many, many engineers working on that end product. But that's really where all this work ends up going, right? How can we reduce the cost of airfare, make it more democratize it, make it more accessible to the end customer?
And would you want that personally?
I think being able to be connected to the world is something that is very important. Being able to see different places. I mean, that's as far as learning new information, that's something that's really important, right? Being able to explore a new culture, see something new. That is something that is very exciting, right? And beyond just the world, think about, for example, space travel, right? Many of the same materials problems that you see within the commercial aviation market today become similar materials problems to what you're going to see other firms like SpaceX perhaps needing, right? These constraints, needing a high temperature material that's not going to melt under extreme temperatures. That's going to be important going into the future. You know, it's hard to predict what's that going to look like because it is such long time frames that we're talking about, 10, 15 years. But I think people will see that end result of connectivity. And that's what people will remember from some of this work with next generation jet engine development.
What other endeavors are you a part of in GE?
So as far as other endeavors, I'm currently the president of the Newcomers Club. So it's an organization on site that is focused on connecting new hires to be able to integrate them with the company culture. And it's a very important organization because, you know, as a new hire, you join the company, you move up to Niskayuna, New York. You might have never been a part of this area. And being able to show what the organization is upon joining is very, very important for retention, right? As well as ensuring that individuals feel that they have a sense of community. So people really begin understanding what the GRC looks like, who to go if they have a question in a different group or a different lab. We host a number of events. So we do a summer fest during the summer period where we'll play a bunch of outdoor games as well as have an entire lunch fully catered. And then in the wintertime, sometimes we'll do cross-country skiing as well as going, seeing a movie as an entire group. So it's a very exciting organization for sure.
Going back to kind of you personally, what does a normal GE workday look like for?
What's unique about GE Research currently is sort of the work week, I think. We're in a hybrid mode right now, which means Monday and Fridays we'll be working remotely, while Tuesday through Thursday we'll be on site. So what does that mean in terms of a week? That means a lot of my independent work is being done Monday and Friday. That's where I'm catching up on analyses or implementing some of the ideas that came up during meetings during that Tuesday through Thursday. And then during Tuesday through Thursday, I'm really spending that time meeting with senior and principal scientists to discuss where research should go next. So to get a little bit more specific in your question, my average workday definitely changes depending on whether it's a Monday or let's say a Wednesday. But I'll give you the Wednesday because that's a little bit more exciting. I'll spend my morning discussing with people, having a series of meetings with updates of work that I've done previously. Sometimes the update can be as simple as, yep, we still have more problems to hash out. The data doesn't exactly make sense, but here's why. Sometimes it's immensely exciting where we discovered something new within the material that might be able to guide that experimentalist. That's always the most exciting. I wish I could say that's every single meeting that I'm a part of, but you know, that is rather rare, right? Most of the time you're really thinking more about the data, trying to understand whether you're thinking about it correctly or not.
And additionally, when you're not working, what kind of keeps you a bit busy? What are your hobbies and your passions on the side?
Yeah, so I do a little bit of music on the side. So I studied music while I was in school as well. I studied at Peabody Conservatory. So I continue that, teach a number of lessons, as well as play in a couple of groups in the capital region. So that's my primary thing outside of work, as well as doing some hiking, a lot of outdoors adventures. One of the pluses about working in this area is the ability to get outside, go hiking, go swimming in the summertime when the lakes are not freezing cold, but also in the winter, being able to go skiing, whether cross country or downhill. We're close to a number of mountains in the area. So it's exciting to be able to take part in the lovely nature that's around.
Do you think these hobbies positively affect your work and thinking life as a scientist and vice versa?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, no, I think it's very, very crucial to have something else, right? If you think about, you know, what I was saying before, a lot of my work is really thinking about problems very, very deeply. And it's important to take your mind off the problems that you're currently thinking of, to have that inspiration. Sometimes you're thinking about something incorrectly. And if you don't have that time to step away from it, I don't really know how you would be able to constantly be able to pass that barrier. It's not like you'll just go in and be able to solve every single problem that you see. So just being able to step away from the work and sort of turn that part of your brain off is almost as important as being able to keep it on during the workday.
So what are your future plans and goals career-wise?
As far as my future goals, I want to continue in the same vein, utilizing AI and machine learning for materials development and really accelerating that process, gaining the expertise needed to be able to implement these tools to make a number of cutting-edge breakthroughs, to be able to use those tools to really progress the development of material science would make me immensely happy in my career. And I think GE is a fantastic place to be able to progress that, right? Being able to use them as a platform to be able to constantly build my knowledge, as well as utilize the resources that they have to make that next cutting edge material. My goal is in some ways to continue right now what I am currently doing and developing these core competencies that I'm currently focused on.
This has been an excellent interview. Thank you again for being such a good guest. I really enjoyed, you know, asking you these questions, and hopefully you enjoyed this as well. And kind of to just end this off, are there any sort of concluding, finalizing words you'd like to kind of give to the audience?
I think if I had one concluding with a couple of words. If you're interested in something, right? If you're fascinated by the study of engineering or perhaps something not engineering wise, I would say pursue it, right? If you're passionate about something, pursue that passion. Follow it to the nth degree. And in that process, remember to be patient with yourself while you're learning. There'll be many ups and downs within that pursuit of your passion. Acquiring the ability to be patient as you learn along the way, I think is really an attribute that will ultimately lead to the success in any discipline that you choose to study, whether it be material science or something completely different. Although I am a little bit hoping that people listening into this might decide to study the material science disciplines. Perhaps not, but we'll see.
Probably will. Thank you again for being on the show.
Awesome. Thank you.
So just to end this off here, a few quick shout outs. First of all, LifeWork Systems, this is our affiliate and collaborative partner. She's essentially an HR superstar, and she goes out and helps corporate businesses improve their business infrastructure, their social infrastructure, and to create a better collegial environment in that specific work. I'm kind of her lead. Reach out to me if you want to get a connection to her. She's a great resource for any medium to large size business. Next up, the show. It's on our YouTube channel. Click that bell. Check us out. We're slowly growing in subscribers. So subscribe if you want to see more great interviews like this. Then our Roku channel. The Roku channel is sort of the new thing we're doing right now. This is going to be on Roku as well as all of our other episodes. So check that out too. And then the final thing, Jimbo Paris Services. We are now offering a service-based business. If you're interested in working with us, as we are doing with some other corporate businesses, check us out. We offer marketing advice, consulting advice, and we also help, you know, improve your own leads too, to specific audiences. All right. Thanks again. I'm Jimbo Paris. This is the Jimbo Paris Show. Thank you for listening to the Jimbo Paris Show.